Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. According to Northumberland County official reports, 78 people are homeless. It could be more. There are only 24 beds at Transition House, the county's only emergency shelter. People are sleeping in tents in the local woods. They sleep on the beach. They live in their cars. There are young people, single people, families, and shockingly, seniors who cannot afford to live in their houses anymore. Leaders from the Greenwood Coalition, Moms Stop Harm, and St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church wrote an open letter calling on the community to come out and meet earlier this week to brainstorm solutions. This interview puts the issues surrounding the meeting into context. Here is the interview. I'm so pleased to have with me today Missy McLean, director of the Ontario Mom Stop the Harm and an advocate for housing. David Sheffield, executive director of the Greenwood Coalition, and the Reverend Neil Ellis of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church. All of you, welcome to Consider This.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
Why is it necessary to write an open letter to the community regarding the crisis facing people who cannot find a proper place to live? Who would like to start to answer that question?
Well, I can jump in there. I, as someone who's been kind of involved with the issue of homelessness as a volunteer some years ago, and in my role at Greenwood Coalition over the past few years, we've seen a growing concern around housing, and you know, you and I have discussed this over the years as well. And the unsheltered homelessness we've seen increase in the last couple of years, particularly, and there've been some responses to that, and we've been involved in some of that. But I think where we stand today is the need for just basic shelter for folks in Northumberland far exceeds any capacity to do anything about that in any of the official ways. So, it's like the Humpty Dumpty story, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again. And so do we just leave, Humpty there, or can the community do something? And I've shown up to this issue at this time because I feel like there is capacity, there are ideas in the community that aren't being tapped into at this point by official sources, and we need to listen to folks in the community, and in particular the folks who are living this.
Missy, why did you put your name to this open letter?
I mean, for a bunch of reasons, but mostly because the folks in this community who are being impacted by this housing crisis, and in particular are being impacted by the stigma and the sort of othering that homelessness can bring upon folks. These are my neighbors. I'm in community with these individuals. And so further to what, just building on what David was just saying, why write an open letter to the community about this issue? Well, it's because as advocates and folks who work in, the homelessness sector and supporting people, and faith leaders like Neil, we spend a lot of time writing to and speaking to politicians, policymakers, et cetera. And as David was saying, the solutions to this issue have not come fast enough and are not going to arrive fast enough. And so that's why we wrote specifically to our fellow community members, because that's who we need to speak to, because that's where we're going to find the solutions, or at least the supports and compassion that folks need in this moment.
For those who may not be familiar with it, what is Mom Stop the Harm?
Sure. So Mom Stop the Harm is a network of families across Canada who are all impacted by the war on drugs, which is, in our opinion, it's a war on the people that we love. We're all impacted by either a substance use related harm or death. It was founded by three women out west who each lost a son to a toxic drug death or drug adjacent death, I should specify. And they decided to turn their grief into action. And they started with 15 people at the first meeting in 2016, and we're now over 3,000 members across the country.
Neil, what made you a signatory to this open letter?
Well, St. Andrews has had a long connection in serving the community. We've run a soup kitchen out of the church once a week for more years than I've been a member of the community, probably upwards of 20 plus years. And we all know that food banks were a temporary solution, and now they are somewhat of a permanent solution to the problem of food security. And that goes hand in hand with housing. Those two issues are adjacent. When I arrived here in Cobourg a handful of years ago, I became quickly aware of these issues and made some connections with David and have met Missy along the way. And we might refer to it as, a social justice issue. You know, people and housing is a human right, and that's codified. For me as a minister and as a person of faith, it's very much a gospel issue that people are to be cared for, that we're all to be cared for. And so while we might not specify that as, housing, where I come to it and the stories that I interpret on a weekly basis indicate that family and community matter, and we're all invited and encouraged to be part of one wider community. So in signing the letter, it addresses and says that there are members of our community who we're not looking after and that we're not caring for. And we've got to find a better way to do that. As David said, the official sources, they can only go so far and they can only address things to a certain extent. So what are those community supports? What are those other ideas that we can implement and try to move things forward here?
I'd like to talk a little bit about the content of the letter. And in it, it states that there are 78 people, who are homeless, according to Northumberland County. How do we know this? Anybody want to just give me an insight? Go ahead, David.
Sure. Yeah, I can jump in there. So that number comes from Northumberland County Social Services, and they do the point in time counts that are required by the province every couple of years or so, where they take a snapshot and they never promise that they're connecting with everyone, but they try to connect over a few days with folks that may be living with homelessness and add them to an active by name list as those individuals kind of do a little survey and they give consent for their information to be shared with other agencies. And so that if a person gets housed, if a person or leaves the community or something like that, they'll be taken off of that list. So it's an active list that is coming and going at all times, and so that's currently the situation there. It doesn't capture those folks who are living unsheltered in the community or homeless in some fashion, who haven't been picked up in that. And I've encountered quite a few people this week who aren't on that list, but are living outdoors. And so we know that at minimum, that's what we're looking at.
David, you and I have talked a bit about this before, but I'd like to revisit it because I think it's a really important piece of the puzzle. And that is, in the wintertime, we're very conscientious of cold and getting people into warming centers and giving them some temporary shelter. And then we get into the summer and, when it gets super hot, we do a little bit of around cooling, but it seems to shift. And you and I have also talked about the need for something year-round that is addressing this. Can we just go back and revisit that a little bit and flush that out some more so that people understand how those efforts tie into what we're talking about now about sheltering people and giving them some place other than a temporary place to live.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we think about cold weather and you know, get concerned about folks being out in cold weather. And, you know, I think typically, you know, more people are killed by the weather in hot weather than in the in cold weather. And so taking those things into consideration. And earlier today, Missy and I were talking about an individual that she came upon yesterday, dehydrated, passed out beside the street. And there's a second person this week that she had encountered just around town. And so the dangers are high. You know, I mean, even things as simple as, you know, access to a washroom, you know, it doesn't matter what the season is, you need to use a washroom. And so so thinking about this, I guess we're calling folks in to consider the fact that we have this many people with nowhere to go. There's nowhere legally they can go to shelter themselves. And so that's kind of the critical piece at this moment, and that's a year-round situation, and you know, we focus on housing and affordable housing, et cetera, and often don't even get around to talking about the folks. It's almost like they're invisible, the folks that don't have shelter.
Missy, I'd like to ask you about this, because I guess what we're talking about is the comparison between temporary measures and permanent measures. I wonder if you could help us focus on that aspect of this and what you're trying to do at this meeting that's coming up.
So I think what you're asking, Rob, is, you know, why are we focusing on the temporary shelters and not pushing for more of the permanent shelters? Is that the gist of it? So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just basically about being pragmatic. I mean, the permanent shelters are not going to materialize today or by the end of the summer or by the end of the year. And so we need to focus on the temporary shelter to keep people alive right now, just as what David was talking about, and the impacts of, you know, this increasingly chaotic and forceful weather that we're seeing, and the impacts that's having today on folks, that drives the necessity to really focus on temporary shelter.
Neil,
I think also, if I can jump in there,
sure,
just for a second,
yeah,
I
please.
Think also focusing on, you know, being pragmatic and focusing on the short term. In this situation, we're trying to have the dialogue with the community, and if folks will, you know, sometimes people notice the short term crisis, they notice what's in front of their face, and that's an opportunity to start the conversation, and that's what we're hoping, that this is just the beginning of you know, actual solutions.
Mm-hmm. Neil, I wanted to ask you about an aspect of the letter around affordability, mm-hmm. because while we're talking about taking these immediate actions, there are these deeper systemic problems around affordability. So the letter talks about people on fixed incomes like Ontario Works or the Ontario Disability Support Plan, ODSP, or seniors. Can you explain some of these challenges that people are facing?
Well, I think those are, you know, when we look at the real estate market, when we look at inflation, the rising cost of gas, food, whatever it might be, everyone is feeling that pinch right now. So imagine you're on a fixed income, which hasn't kept up with past inflationary pressures, which we might consider more normal. And so from a systemic point of view, in terms of our social services, well, it's good that there's something there, and it's good that people receive something. It hasn't kept up with market rates. It hasn't kept up with housing costs. And, you know, people now have to make a choice about, you know, what bill do I pay at the end of the month? Do I feed my family? Do I pay the rent? Do I find someone else to live with so that we can share and split a rent and hope that works? And so, like I say, it's wonderful that, you know, we have a social network, that we have a social safety net, but that social safety net hasn't kept up with the rising costs that people are bearing. And that's forcing them into situations where they're finding themselves homeless or underhoused.
David, The county just released its annual report on its housing and homeless strategy. And without going through item by item, it is a grocery list of its accomplishments it has achieved over the past year. And if you read it, it's lengthy and it gives an impressive list of what has been done. If the county was doing so well, all this great stuff, why are we getting a completely different message from this open letter?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess they map out their priorities and measure against those priorities, and I think some progress is being made on housing related issues, and some folks who were homeless have been housed along the way, but I think as Missy alluded to earlier, the concern has increased more rapidly than the response rate of sort of the institutions who've taken on these things. And so even looking at we talked about 78 people on the by name list as being homeless, the last point in time count was in September of last year, and so what's happened since September, an awful lot of properties have been sold, an awful lot of people have been evicted, a lot of things are happening really quickly. I think people can see in their neighborhood the for sale signs going up, but I'm not sure that the general public kind of understands what's happening under that, and so where we're situated more at the street level, encountering people, we're seeing more people who have nowhere to go, using a tent, sheltering themselves somewhere. And Missy alluded to the folks like seniors who may have a car when they got evicted, and we're seeing more people living in their cars now, and finding places to park their car and sort of surviving that way and feeling a little more safe and secure than someone in a tent. And so there are different ways of looking at any particular challenge, and I think that in the same way that I guess it's a question of sort of setting the standards, and we the government can set standards of what is an appropriate response or what is a measurable response to a concern, but then that comes down to the neighborhood and the community, and do we think it's okay to have hands up if it's okay to have 78 or more people sleeping outdoors in your neighborhood, whether or not the government thinks that's an acceptable level. And so that's again, that's why the letter, that's why the looking toward a community conversation about this has become our focus.
Neil, I'd like you to elaborate on something that David was just alluding to. We have, all of you have sort of mentioned the struggle to get good numbers that represent the situation, that give us a snapshot, which is the kind of thing that most bureaucrats and people in the community might want to see, that points out what it is. And yet it's such a struggle to get your handle on what exactly is going here. But David's alluded, Neil, to this other side of it, where it becomes a question of morality.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about, just before I get to the morality and how we fix that, you're talking about the number and how do we know that number is, and not to be overly preachy, but I'm preaching on a passage this Sunday where Jesus encounters a man who's homeless and living on the outskirts. And some of his first words to Jesus, who is a religious authority, is, "Do not torment me," because he's had negative encounters with individuals in authority before. And so when it's hard to, how do we get that number? A lot of people don't want to come forward. They don't want to be counted. They haven't had positive experiences. from a morality point of view, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what kind of a community do we want to live in? Several years ago, pre-pandemic, we had it was around National Housing Day. We had a movie showing at the Loft about some of the things that go on behind the scenes in the housing market. And some of the things, we discussed some of the things that were happening in our community in terms of observed drug use and individuals living homeless and the community not being happy about that, not about that happening in their backyard. And so we have to ask ourselves, well, we know that that's those individuals are there, we have the numbers, and we have to ask ourselves, you know, if we don't have a permanent solution on where they can be housed, how do we want to address that moving forward? How do we want to be human towards one another? How would, you know, for lack of a better term, how would we want to be treated should the roles be reversed? You know, would we want our dignity to be respected? Might we want our privacy to be respected? Different things like that. Things that people who are housed, like myself, like all of us on the call here, take for granted, right? That we have our privacy, that we can close the door and we have our privacy and our dignity is maintained. But when you're living without shelter, when you don't have that, those options they're sometimes stripped from you. So how do we as a community allow that to be restored to these individuals, right? And part of that is saying, well, if we don't have a house for you to live in, and if we don't have a shelter bed for you to sleep in, we're gonna leave you alone. Right. And we're going to allow you to work within the systems and work within your means to move forward with your life. And we're going to provide the supports and the compassion that are necessary for those individuals. And I think that that's the compassion. That's the moral response. And, you know, the moral response isn't the legal response. Right. The legal response is there's a bylaw. You got to move on. Right? But the moral response is there's nowhere to move on to, right? So we're just going to get another phone call in 30 minutes and they're going to get asked to move along again. That doesn't solve anything. That doesn't, it creates more problems. It creates distrust. So how do we navigate that as a community? What are we willing to do? How are we as a community willing to come together to address this?
Are any of you or your organizations represented on the homeless coordinated response team operated by the county?
So Greenwood Coalition is part of the, we call it H Court for short, but yes.
Missy?
No, we don't sit at that table.
Okay. Neil?
No, St. Andrews doesn't do direct casework with individuals who would identify as being on that list, so we're not a member of that table.
All right.
So that, Rob, that's essentially the frontline agencies that have a frontline aspect to homelessness in the community. And that table is typically the frontline workers who are in face-to-face encounters with folks who are homeless. And so some of our staff attend that.
But it's tied to the county, and the county is the bureaucratic leader then for addressing homelessness in terms of politics. And
yeah, yes, that's right. That's the layer.
So I guess what I'm trying to get at here is when we talk about having community solutions and bringing people from the community to create solutions, it's not as if the county is not aware of what's going on in the front lines, and organizations like yours, David, are at the table expressing these concerns on a consistent basis. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, sir.
Neil, what would you say to people who are listening as to why they should be involved?
I think getting back to what you were saying a few minutes ago, Rob, about, you know, if you feel powerless about being able to impact the provincial government, if you feel powerless about having an impact or influence on the county or even the municipal level, you know, what kind of impact can you have within your neighborhood, with your immediate neighbors, with those who live on your street? How do you advocate at that level? How do you change things on that level? And so if we're seeing that trying to apply pressure from the top isn't working, then let's work from the bottom up and make tangible change within our communities, within the relationships that we have with one another. And that's going to lead to real and structural change just within our own communities. And, we can try and filter that up and work with one another. And, you know, failing all else, I would hope that we would at least have a larger sense of compassion and tolerance for other individuals and their experiences. If we change nothing else, maybe we can at least change our outlooks on an individual level about the very human aspect that is this this issue of housing, homelessness, and being able to shelter. Is that these are people who live in our community, have lived in our community, in many instances are seniors who are on fixed incomes, and so, you know, let's see the humanity in one another that this addresses, and if nothing else, let's allow that to happen and come together around this and grow.
Missy McLean, David Sheffield, and the Reverend Neil Ellis, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
Pleasure, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
That was Missy McLean, Director of Ontario Moms Stop the Harm, David Sheffield, Executive Director of the Greenwood Coalition, and Reverend Neil Ellis of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.